All right, we'll get started. So welcome to the June SUNY Library Shared Services update. We'll just get started. If there's any questions that you'd like to ask as any of us are presenting, feel free to put it into chat, or you know, if you'd like, you can also unmute yourself. You should all have that ability. Just a quick update. I know I've been in contact with everyone who was trialing and or interested, and we're working on finalizing the contract with the vendor for 1 year. So about a third of SUNY ended up subscribing to LibKey. There was more interest in that than that, but you know, with the tough financial times, I think a lot of people were having trouble justifying this as a new expense. So we'll focus on the 1 year for now and then see, you know, kind of what we're able to do going forward. You know, just in the immediate future, for the campuses who were trialing and indicated that they did not want to continue with LibKey, we'll work with Third Iron to shut off your access, and we'll remove all of the configuration from Alma and Primo, just as we added that Alma and Primo configuration. And we'll communicate with you as you do this, but we'll do this as quickly as we can. It's probably going to take a couple of weeks just because it's a lot of back and forth with the vendor and multiple steps in Alma and Primo. So we'll try to make this as seamless as we can. And then those of you who have indicated that you're interested, we'll be reaching out about participating institution agreements as well, because this will be on the recharge that'll hit your campuses early next year, late this year, so in the next year's recharge. So we also this morning had a meeting with a variety of administrators at Ex Libris, and we had provided a business impact memo to Ex Libris indicating how extremely problematic and frustrating it was for our March through end of April or into May repository jobs or activation jobs issue was. And we had been consistently asking for a root cause and some sort of a follow-up. So the root cause that we were provided with in this meeting, and I'll talk a little bit about the rest of the discussion in that meeting, was that there was a defect with activation jobs that was released in the March update, that it was supposed, this update was supposed to allow jobs to pick back up where they ended to make job catch up easier and better, but the defect instead would make jobs continuously loop back to the beginning. And since there were a lot of jobs being activated and then we had problems finishing jobs, it was, you know, an endless loop that just spiraled out of control. So Ex Libris fixed this issue on right around April 16th. But then after that, it took longer for us to see these problems resolved, because by the time the root issue was fixed, we had a pretty severe Primo indexing backlog. So from April 16th forward, Ex Libris and the Primo V team continued to work to try to get ahead of our backlog so that Primo indexing was caught up with all of the activations that were, you know, had been happening for those multiple weeks, or that were being put at Primo in that short amount of time as well. So that's really what happened, is that the activations, that there was a defect, and then it then led to a pretty severe backlog. And I know we've had constant discussions about Primo indexing. And this is a bit different in that the problems that we had in July of last year after we went live were that Primo, I'm assuming everyone can hear my sound. Leslie, you might want to check your audio. The problems that we had in July and around Go Live were that Primo indexing wasn't seeing things that it should be indexing. And that wasn't the case here. It was just a backlog. And they've certainly tried to optimize so that they can index faster. So, you know, it's not great. It's certainly disappointing that we had to go through this, but it doesn't look like this is back to the same issues that we were having or related to not picking up things that should be indexed as far as Primo. So on the Ex Libris end, they, you know, especially since Prima V and Alma is so tightly integrated, they owned that they were not doing as well as they should have with facilitating the troubleshooting between the Primo and Alma team. So going forward, if we have a problem, they'll designate someone at a program manager level or a VP level who will coordinate this across both teams so that we're not having to spend a lot of time troubleshooting and then spend even more time advocating for Ex Libris to cooperate more between departments. And, you know, I think they were pretty upfront that they understood that. They know they need to get better at that. And then they also acknowledge that they need to communicate better with us as a group and then us as institutions when there are problems like this. So, you know, I did escalate this enough where I was getting regular phone calls, phone updates, text updates, email updates on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times a day with the director of North American support. But, you know, he indicated and, you know, the rest of the Ex Libris team indicated that they wanted to go beyond that so that we would have more exposure to the overall efforts and what was going on. So not just working with a support contact, et cetera. So overall, you know, it certainly doesn't fix what happened and the problems that we had, you know, over the course of a month, month and a half. But, you know, I think they really took this and looked at their organizational and technical problems as well. So we'll keep an eye on this. We're using this to put pressure on a variety of other areas too. So, you know, I think we're approaching this in a way that is, this has serious business repercussions. We're not going to argue about this. It's all about, you know, how do we get to the best solution? And Ex Libris explained a lot of how the system works, where we had been asking and hadn't been getting clear answers. So I thought it was a, you know, pretty productive meeting this morning. So if anybody wants any follow-up to this, just let me know. And we're happy to, you know, discuss further as well. All right, so on to some other vendor relations and discussions. OCLC agreement update. It's about this time of year when people are saying, oh, I looked, the agreement is not updated yet, and we're always down to the wire every single year with the amendments, regardless of when we'd get started. So we're just waiting for one final signature on the SUNY end. And I checked with procurement and I said, do you anticipate any sort of delay or that it's not going to get approved by June 30th? And the answer I got back was no. I will check back in the end of this week to see if it has been finalized. So we should have the final year of the five-year master agreement, which has flat pricing. And then in the very, very near future, we'll start talking about next steps for agreements for the OCLC products or services that they're offering. And we'll start communicating with specific functional area groups that will be most affected by this, so that we have a good pool of people who can review responses to whatever contract vehicle we have, and get the most out of our procurement effort in time, because it's really time consuming. We might as well get something out of it. So if your procurement people have any questions about this, or they're not processing something because they need some sense that this is going to be approved and it's a problem, let me know. But by the end of the week, I should have a final word that this has been approved, and it will be updated for another year. So I want to thank everyone who volunteered for the SUNY Library Accessibility Cohort. It's really one of the more frustrating parts of my job, is saying to people who want to contribute, who want to be part of something, sorry, but we had too many people apply. And this is the case. We had almost 30 people apply for the cohort. We ended up taking about 10 because we thought that was really all that we could handle at this point. We're going to see how this goes and see if we can grow cohorts to a larger size in the future. But this being our first real cohort model, we wanted to stick to something that was manageable, but also something that would have good representation from different campuses or types of campuses, and then also different functional areas. And I think we got a real good cross-section of people, perspectives, etc. So these 10 members, plus Michelle, myself, and Nazli from SysAdmin, we'll be working on moving forward with SUNY Library Accessibility efforts, and you'll expect to hear from this group in the near future. And we're going to be testing this and then reproducing this in some other areas, and I don't want to have this be too much of a teaser, but I think we're going to try this in another area too in the near future. And we wanted to have we're happy to have a practical deliverable to, as the end goal. And then if anything else comes out of the accessibility cohort, great. But we want to review the accessibility documentation and develop a process that will inform and make something that can be sustainable for the SUNY Library Accessibility Documentation Repository. And then what we also hope to get out of, and we hope that the cohort members get out of this, is that training and then group analysis of SUNY-wide issues, and then also the opportunities as well, that we learn more about that from a systemic standpoint, and then also individuals gain expertise. We have self-directed and instructor-led training as part of this. So I think it's going to be, a good experience, and you'll see some things that all of us can tap into as far as shared or group efforts with accessibility. So if you're interested in joining the discussion, but you're not part of the cohort, please do join the workplace group that we have for SUNY Library Accessibility. And I know not everyone loves workplace. And certainly I know there's a lot of criticism of Facebook in many, many areas. Believe me, we understand that, but there are so many closely connected communities on workplace with web accessibility, etc., that we thought it was good to put this into workplace, because the more people could join, there could be a broader perspective. Some people outside of libraries could also join as well. So this is a join URL that all you have to do is paste that in your browser, and then you'll authenticate via federated authentication, and you should be added to this group. All right, so on to some nuts and bolts things. So just a few of the highlights from our June monthly meeting. And I just wanted to also say, if anybody would like to come to any of these monthly meetings we have with support to talk about your cases, et cetera, that's always a possibility. Or you can just say, please bring these cases up, and that will usually bring some more attention. Some of the things that we talked about are just the growing number and our growing dissatisfaction with content issues. Certainly, we understand that working with publishers isn't easy, but it doesn't mean that you can just use that as an excuse for not communicating about cases. And we gave them a fair amount of examples. And one of them was Gale linking issues, and that we need to see some sort of traction on that. If they need us to lean in on the vendor side with Gale, we're fine, but you know, we need to at least have some sort of a response from content to do that. And we did ask that that content management from the support end would also attend these meetings and be more engaged with us, because most of our engagement is with support from an Alma Primo perspective, and content is in its own separate area of the ProQuest and Ex Libris umbrella. So we also talked about some other specific issues, such as the saved searches letter, still having issues that we're going to escalate that. I think we've been able to get Ex Libris to move up course reserves indexing issues, except for this one issue that is happening at University of Buffalo, that they just couldn't find the root cause and they need to get another example. But you know, this is just another thing of, we're trying to tie all of these things together so that we get more attention on things like course reserves indexing issues, that it's not like Ex Libris doesn't want to fix it, but they just need this to, they need us to show them this as a priority. And then we also have an engagement with Ex Libris that has turned out to be more quarterly and a little bit more formal, which is fine, where we get to pick out a top five where we have gone through the process, support has identified that that's how the system should work, and we're like, that's not how we want the system to work, and we don't want to go through the long, complicated process of idea exchange or NERS and then trying to get enough voting. We want to see this to resolution faster, and I think it's having a good effect. They've used our experiences with them to expand it to WRLC, the Washington Research Library Council. So I think Ex Libris is trying to engage consortia better, and this is one of their efforts. And you know, I think we've had generally good, a good experience with this, and we already have a few more that we want to add as far as the top five, and then we'll be able to add a couple more issues in the August September timeframe. But some of these are based on us trying to just get resource sharing better, working, tuning it up, so that if something fails, that you can easily rework that request, much as you would with if direct request fails in OCLC or ILLiad, or on the lending end, or I guess this is on both ends, where a locate would fail for resource sharing, even if we do have that. We also, we're kind of shocked at how this behavior was happening, and also when Ex Libris told us that indeed that was how the system was designed, so that on a link resolver page, if something isn't able to match, then it will match on other less precise criteria and will often give the user the wrong information to pass into fulfillment options. And we're changing that as well. Also the issue with the print versus the ebook and being able to interlibrary loan request an ebook for a variety of reasons. One would be preference, another accessibility. And I think, you know, they heard us after we made the case to them. And Tim's favorite case, if you ever want to get Tim's blood boiling, ask him about 709070. It's a kind of a running joke with us, but finally this will be solved where, looping without ever, with the item not ever getting checked in by the borrower, that should happen less because it will at least prompt the user. Just kind of an example of when these things are coming out. And, you know, I know this doesn't feel like, you know, something we should be celebrating all that much, but it's been a pretty fast movement into things getting released because we just started this a couple of months ago. So, you know, getting something from concept into a new release in 4 or 5 months is pretty fast in, if it's seen as an enhancement. So I think this has turned out relatively well. And, you know, we criticize Ex Libris a lot and often for good reason, but, you know, I want to give them some credit for a good initiative that we've found is, been really helpful as well. We plan on getting more wide input on a top five. The program managers have been talking to their communities about it, but, there might be some things that we're missing. So now that we've tested that this is actually a good path to getting something fixed or an enhancement, we're going to see how we can make this a bit more participatory. I just wanted to give three people, a lot of credit, a lot of thanks. This has been a long road from before implementation to now. David from Binghamton, Joe from Buff State, Angela from Morrisville. They were founding members of the LSP Task Force, and then they rolled into the LSP Advisory Board. It's been, 3 years and change. It's been a long commitment for them, and, they've been extremely helpful in so many ways, moving us to where we are now. I think we're cooperating a lot more, collaborating a lot more. We've moved much more into a shared system. And a lot of that goes with all of the time they've been volunteering to move things forward. And just a welcome to Nancy, Lauren, and Fatoma from University of Buffalo, Potsdam, and Farmingdale, who will be, the new advisory board members. And then David was co-chairing and bringing Jessica up to speed, and she's now fully the chair of the LSP Advisory Board. So thanks to David, Joe, and Angela, and looking forward to working with the new Advisory Board members. Asta, you want to take this one?
Yeah, definitely. So hi, everyone. SLSS has planned a series of workshops focused on collaboration across SUNY libraries. And they're kind of geared towards people in leadership positions or moving towards leadership positions, but they're absolutely open to anyone. A shout out to Bill Jones at Geneseo for designing this logo for us. So we have two workshops planned as part of this event. Each one includes some asynchronous pre-workshop readings and sort of reflection on those readings. And then a two-hour synchronous workshop with a facilitator, and followed by another asynchronous sort of discussion, open part for a few days following the workshop. And so we have, we've lined up two really engaging facilitators for these events. Michael Levine Clark, he's the Dean of Libraries at the University of Denver, and he's done a ton of work in library collections, particularly data-driven collection building. And Galadriel Chilton, she is the director, I think, of the Ivy League's Ivy Plus consortium of academic libraries. And she has done a ton of work sort of focused on the human element of project management. So working with people who are individuals and, you know, not textbook, as it applies to process and managing large projects within academic libraries. So there's more information about the events and the speakers linked in this slide, and I will also add those links to the chat. Each workshop costs $35, and we are able to provide some financial assistance to a number of untenured attendees. Let me know if you have any questions, and that is all that I have.
Yeah, I think, Esther, I mean, these are more than just like a single workshop. It's a series of like activities and guided discussions as well. So, I mean, I think it's a really good value for $35, at least from my perspective. All right. Michelle, take it away.
Great. Thanks, Shannon. Hey, everybody. So we have been live on CDI. It has been almost a month as of tomorrow, which is kind of exciting. There have been many discussions about the CDI and Basecamp, and thank you to everyone who has posted questions out there. I think that's a really good place to get information. One of the things that has come up repeatedly is that people are concerned because they're seeing ebooks where they weren't expecting to see them. They're seeing them in the article scope. The reason for that is that in the past with the PCI, you would have to deliberately activate an ebook collection for searching, and in the CDI, it assumes that anything you have full text is active for searching. So I wanted to just mention this briefly because what I would like you to remember is that you have control of this. We have done some testing on this and we have found that there is a way to control your ebooks that are showing. If you follow these steps to, you know, deactivate your ebook collection, you can go to the CDI tab on the collection and check this Do Not Show as Full Text Available in CDI, and that will stop those records from showing up in your searches. You will still get your ALMA results, which is good. That's what you want. You want to see the ALMA books, but the duplicate entry for the ebook will disappear. This would also deactivate your chapter level searching for that collection, so you'll have to decide, you know, how you want that to work. But I know the CDI is a change, but please do continue to post questions about it. We're more than happy to help you figure out where your data is coming from and what you can do about it. The CDI is meant to be a good thing, not a deprecation of services, so please do continue to post your questions. And Nancy says, would we need to set the activation status to not active? No, not if you, I mean, if you don't want your collection to be searchable in your expanded search, you would set it to not active. But if you do, so again, we can talk about that on Basecamp, but it's primarily the Do Not Show as Full Text for the regular searching. The CDI search activation status has more to do with whether or not you want records to show up in an expanded search. And for ebooks, I would think that you would want that as not active because you don't want people getting record results for things you can't get for them. So for in case of the ebooks, yes, you would want to do that, but you may not always want to do that for everything. So good point, Nancy. You can go ahead, Shannon. So I just wanted to talk very briefly about a few of the known issues that we've come up against, and we are communicating these to Ex Libris, and we have made some progress with that. In July, they are supposedly going to fix a problem where if you have what's called a link and record link, and this would be from collections that you would previously have activated in the PCI that both the index record and the link would come from the PCI. This works the same way with the CDI. Usually these are things like OA collections that you did not have to have active in Alma to get them to show up as search results with links in Primo, but it could be all kinds of things. So you can tell when it's a link and record collection because it'll say link and record right here in the full text linking in CDI. But what's happening, unfortunately, is that if you have an article that has both a link and record result from a collection and a subscription result from a collection, that is overriding, the link and record is overriding the subscription links. So in this case, if you had something that could, you could get it both from the DOAJ and also from Science Direct, that Science Direct link is not going to show up in your view online, which is totally baffling, but that is supposedly going to be fixed in July. We are still seeing missing collection names, and this is an example here, view full text in collection. That is supposed to be fixed soon. I would say they said that should be done by mid-July as well. So instead of just collection, a generic term, it will be the actual name of the collection. We've also seen problems with resource types, local portfolios, availability, but these are things that have all been reported. One of the things that's helping us is that more and more institutions are going live with the CDI, and if you look on the Primo list, you're seeing that they have the exact same questions we do. So I think the more groups that go live with it, the more they get these same kinds of questions, the more quickly things will be fixed. So the nice thing is that we have a few more months before the fall semester starts, and I think we'll be in much better shape by then. And then this is just a link to the known gaps and issues, and you're welcome to go take a look at that. You can go ahead, Shannon. So this is a case, we actually made some good progress on this case today, and thanks so much to Nancy Babb for doing some testing of this issue. Buffalo actually was the first campus to report this. They reported it last week on Tuesday. And what was happening is if you have a record in Primo that's been deduped, meaning that both the print and electronic are showing on the same bib record from Alma, in your results list, it would show that you had it both in print and online, but when you opened the record, the electronic would disappear. The available line would disappear from the top, the view online link would disappear. It was kind of a crazy thing and sort of out of nowhere. Why did this start happening? So with Nancy's testing and some exploration that we did, we've discovered that this has to do, as I mentioned, with the deduping. And this is an option in your brief results tab in your view configuration in Discovery. And so there are a couple ways you can get around this. You can either uncheck the box that says enable dedupe, and then you will get two separate records for print and for online in your search results. So that's one option. I know that's not ideal for many places, but that would certainly fix the issue of the missing electronic. But the other thing we can do is that if you pick one of these preferred records, Alma P means print, Alma E means electronic, and Alma D means digital. Most places don't really have many digital collections at this point, but you can decide which record from Alma you want to be your preferred record. If you pick one of these, that resolves the problem. So my suspicion, and I don't know this for sure, is that when this was rolled out with the June release, they've configured these three options correctly, but perhaps the none option, which is the default for everyone, was not configured correctly. And that's unfortunate because the release notes did not say that you, if you wanted to continue to dedupe, that you had to pick one of these three. So we are moving forward with this and trying to get this resolved. But in the meantime, I was happy to find that we could have a fix for this until the issue is resolved. So you can go ahead, Shannon. So other cases about linking, I'm not going to go real deep into these, but I just wanted you to be aware that we have reported these issues. So Empire actually noticed that direct linking was no longer working for unpaywall and NZ activated content. So we have reported that. That is a known issue and it has been moved along to tier two. So I'm hoping we hear something back on that soon. That's definitely a problem. If you open the full record, the link works, but most people, if you have direct linking activated at your campus, you're used to just clicking on the direct link. And that's the functionality that we want to work across the board. Another really weird thing, and this again has been reported and they're looking into it and directly related to the CDI activation, is that if you have a link in your view online that's supposed to go to Science Direct, or I've seen some other packages where this happens as well, it's not going to Science Direct. It's somehow overriding that link and pointing it out to some other package like Ovid. I suspect that this is related to the DOI. I think that the system is finding a DOI in the metadata and just trying to link that way, rather than through your Alma activation link. So again, we've reported it and we're working on getting that resolved. This next one, view online links not showing until you refresh the page. I don't think that this is CDI related. This is a general linking issue. And unfortunately, it's an indexing issue. This specific one was one that New Paltz reported where they activated 6 individual ebooks. 5 out of the 6 worked fine. And the 6th one, you could get the bib record, but not the view online link. And we are working with Ex Libris to, you know, what we would love to do is run reports regularly to find this content because we cannot fix it. It has to be reported to them to fix, but it doesn't look like there's an easy way to do that, but we will keep pushing them on this. They did explain to me why this is happening and it was a little over my head. It was about records going into the central index instead of getting linked to the network indexing setup. So if you see behavior like this, do please report it because it won't be fixed until they go manually and fix it. So again, we are continuing to push on that. Shannon did mention the Gale linking problems. We are still pursuing those. And then this last one, we're finding that because we're using a merged record in the CDI for article content, occasionally we're getting bad linking because in some cases, the article number that's in that metadata that's being used to link out does not match the article number in the resulting system. I've seen this with JSTOR, I've seen this with Gale. So that is also continuing to be reviewed. So you can go ahead, Shannon. Okay, I'm gonna just take a minute, take a breath here. Okay, so the Primo July release, there was a lot of content in there. I just pulled out a few things. I do have a link to the full list of all of the things that are coming. The things I was most interested in are some of the problems that have been fixed. So I know that a lot of people, when you're doing a test view, you make a duplicate copy of the view that you like, and then you want to play around with it. And when you go to download the current customization package for that copied view, you'll get an error. It'll be empty. And you have to just go back to the original view, download that one, mess with the name of it so you can get it to upload correctly. So apparently with the July release, this has been fixed and you should be able to just download the current customization package right from your duplicated view. This next one, searches with and without apostrophes, they say that has been fixed in terms of making those search results consistent. There's been a lot of discussion on the Primo list recently about searching with quotes and, you know, different kinds of searching. So I think that there are still going to be issues out there, particularly for, you know, searching within quotes. But I did want to note that apparently apostrophes now are going to be working better. This next one, creation date was not consistent with Facet. I know there has been discussion recently in Basecamp about the creation date and, you know, how is this different from publication date and why, you know, how do you get this to work correctly? So I don't know that this particular fix is going to fix all of our questions about it. I did look at one of the published cases they referenced and they said that it was dealing with the metadata where the field should be pulled from. So perhaps this will make it work better. But I thought it was interesting and somewhat relevant to some of the questions we've had. So another thing I know that UB had reported that facets would disappear or would never load when they were doing more complicated searching. So this is supposed to be fixed if you have a search that uses asterisks or question marks. So that's a good thing. And Shannon mentioned we are pursuing some of the saved searches problems. And my hope is that maybe this fix that is coming will help resolve some of the cases where you expect it to send emails and it's not sending emails. I'm just going to look at the chat for a second. So Jen says there's an option to focus default to the search box. I think that has to do with like screen readers. Is that correct, Jen, in terms of when you open the page, it'll go automatically to the search box? I did see that, but I wasn't exactly sure how all of that would work, so I didn't really want to talk about that. But so I'm glad you brought that up. And I guess my concern about that is that for web accessibility, you want to have your first link be a skip link. So I don't know if that will fulfill that need. So we definitely need to look into that some more. But yeah, there are some other things, as I mentioned, that are in the release notes. So I would take a look at those when you get a minute. So thank you, Jen. For the August sneak peek, they did say that you are going to now be able to have up to 100 local fields, which seems like a lot, but also sounds like a good thing. And when you're configuring local resource types, one of the challenges has been that it was very limited how you could set them up. You couldn't pull more than one field, and you had to be very specific. So from now on, you're going to be able to do that a little more with more flexibility and have multiple fields and be able to pull things in more easily. And then this, I don't know how many people are using the purchase request form, but if you are using it, there will be a way to add an indication when the library already holds the item being requested, which I think would be a really helpful thing, because I know that often faculty won't search the catalog before they request something, so that would be a handy tool to use with that. So you can go ahead, Shannon. And then again, there were way more things on this list than the few that I pulled out here from the e-resources, the AMA release notes. But I did want to note these couple of things, and I apologize, my screenshot is not great, but you will now be able to see a CZ update date. So if you click on the little question mark in your AMA, there should be now a list or a link here that, or not a link, a thing here that tells you when the CZ was last updated. I know that we've run into issues where if you have a multi-part CZ updates job, you aren't really sure when things are finally getting updated. So this should be helpful with that. And you won't see that until a full CZ updates job goes through. So if you don't see it right away after the release comes out, don't be alarmed. You should see it soon. And kind of related to that, a lot of the time you would see a notice that your job failed if it couldn't get completely done. And what they did is they changed that to now say that the job status is skipped instead of failed. So I think that'll be helpful. And then finally, one of the things that I think is a good move is that you'll now be able to put an order on a package that has been activated in the CZ in terms of electronic resource packages. I know that was challenging when we started activating things like StatRef in the NZ because the campus would have to keep sort of a dummy activation live in their local campus AMA because they needed something to add their record, their POL to. So I think this is a good move forward. You know, if we end up managing more things centrally, this will just make it easier for people to keep track of them acquisitions wise. So I think that's it. You can go ahead, Shannon. Oh, no, one more slide. So the provider zone, you may have heard some talk about the provider zone. What this is supposed to do is allow vendors to have better control of the content that's in the CZ. So you will start seeing collections in the CZ that have this little tag here. It's got a little icon and it'll tell you who's managing this content. In theory, this is supposed to make sure that the content gets activated more quickly and more accurately. We will see how that goes. And I checked on this, and you will still submit a Salesforce case if you find that you're missing a title or if the date is bad, if the linking is bad, but the vendor has to fix it. So I'll be very curious to see how that communication goes in terms of them getting notified from Ex Libris and how long it takes things to get fixed. And this is just a little bit more information about that. So I think I really am done now. Great. Thank you.
Okay, you can go to the next slide, Shannon. I just have a really quick reminder that we can still offer you support in analyzing e-resources for potential cancellations. We are happy to look at your entire collection or specific resources. We can look at data such as overlap analysis and usage. So if you're interested, send us a request via LibAnswers. And just if you have any upcoming deadlines, try to give us a few days advance notice so that we can get that into you in enough time. And that's all that I have today.
Great. Thank you, Esther. Shannon, you can move on to the next slide. All right. I just want to remind you all of where things stand with ALMA article resource sharing. We have implemented article resource sharing in ALMA for low volume libraries who need a cost-effective alternative to ILLiad and OCLC resource sharing. So far we have 9 SUNY institutions who are currently borrowing articles live in ALMA. I've got 4 other institutions who are testing, so I would expect that number to rise within the next few weeks. If your library hasn't been testing article resource sharing in ALMA, but you do think you may want to investigate alternatives to ILLiad and OCLC resource sharing, please send me an email and I can configure things so that you can start testing article resource sharing in ALMA. As I said, we have 9 borrowers. We also have 9 lenders, Albany, Binghamton, Buffalo, Stony Brook, Fredonia, Oswego, Purchase, Upstate Medical, and Empire State College. I just want to say thank you to all of those libraries for filling requests. I don't plan to bring up any more lenders at this point in time. The borrowing volume has been low enough that those lenders have been able to handle the volume. So I think we're going to stick to the 9 lenders for the time being. And I also want to point out that in the August 2020 release, there should be a major improvement to article resource sharing. Right now, the way things work is when a lender fills a request, the borrower receives the article as a PDF attachment. I should say the borrowing library receives that email with the PDF attachment, and then they have to manually forward the email to their user. And that's what's really making ALMA article resource sharing only appropriate for low volume libraries. But in the August 2020 release, there should be a fix to an email that will allow users who have submitted requests to receive download links directly from the lender. So the borrowing library does not need to manually forward an email. I will be testing that thoroughly as soon as the fix is available. So fingers crossed that that will be a good option for us. And I'll be sure to keep you all posted on that. So Shannon, if you can move on to the next slide, please. So physical resource sharing. I have been keeping an eye on the requests from libraries to restart Empire Library Delivery Service. And just a reminder, if you want to resume service, you need to request a restart date from ELD. And I've included here the link to the form where you can do that. And like I said, I'm keeping an eye on these requests. And once I see that your restart date is pending, I'll reach out to you to just get a sense of where you are in terms of, are you ready to start borrowing? Are you ready to start lending? There's no pressure either way. It's just asking to see what you would like to do. And as far as turning physical resource sharing back on for everyone, we want to make sure we avoid any sort of scenario where we turn resource sharing on before we have enough lenders capable of providing good service. So our current plan is to turn resource sharing back on when we have 2 university centers who are capable of lending and at least 8 other institutions who are capable of lending. That could end up changing a little bit depending on how things go. Like if we get to a point where we've got only 1 university center but 15 other libraries, I think we'd be inclined to turn things back on. But right now the plan is for 10 libraries, at least 2 of which need to be university centers. Currently, we have 1 university center who has told me that they'll be ready to start lending by the end of June, and 4 other libraries who will also be ready to start lending by the end of June. So I think we're still at least a few weeks away from being able to turn physical resource sharing back on in ALMA. Also, I know there's going to be a lot of questions about how materials should be handled in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. So I'm going to be working on a toolkit containing information on how to safely handle materials. And I will be making that available very soon. So Shannon, if you can move on to the next slide. Thanks. Just want to give you an update on where we are in terms of expanding resource sharing beyond SUNY. Our fill rates in ALMA for physical items are still pretty low. It was around 60% at the time we had to shut things down because of the pandemic. And since then, we've had a lot of libraries tell us that they do plan, or at least are seriously considering canceling ILLiad and or WorldShare ILL. So it's very important that we be able to expand access to materials via ALMA resource sharing. I've been working a lot with Union College on physical requests. We've talked a bit about articles as well. But we're pretty close to being ready to go with Union, and I would expect Union to start showing up in our rotas. It's hard to say exactly when, but I think sometime this summer. Also having conversations with Ithaca College, St. John Fisher, Nazareth, Canisius. And in terms of articles, I'm having conversations with the MinPals Consortium in Minnesota, and the Connecticut State Colleges and University System. In fact, I'm meeting with the Connecticut folks tomorrow to talk about this. And lastly, and naturally, we are talking to CUNY as well. They're in the middle of implementation. Their go live is sometime in August. I forget exactly when. But we naturally want to link up our systems with theirs as far as resource sharing goes. We're natural partners. We're all on the same courier. We're in favor of it. They're in favor of it. So we are talking to them. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to make a lot of progress yet because they're dealing with a lot right now between the pandemic and implementation. But definitely we will continue conversations with them, and I'll be sure to keep you folks updated on all of this. So next slide, please, Shannon.
Tim, I just wanted to say, like, our intent on going beyond SUNY, is at least with loan periods, is that we would have a reciprocal 16 weeks if possible. That might not be possible with CUNY, but we're going to try to get as close as we possibly can so that it reduces the configuration that we need to do, but then also provides a pretty standard user experience as well. And I know Tim's talked about that before, just wanted to reiterate it.
Yes, thank you. And I should add that Union College is on board with the 16 weeks. So their loan periods will be identical to ours. So another reminder of the temporary policies that have been implemented by the SLC in terms of resource sharing. All resource sharing loans now have a 16-week loan period with 3 renewals. That's regardless of item type or user group. Also, users are now allowed to return items to any SUNY campus. And lastly, walk-in borrowers can submit resource sharing requests. So if you have a user who wants to have an item delivered to them, but they are no longer living near your campus, they can go to their closest SUNY campus, request a walk-in borrower account, and then submit a request to have an item delivered to that library. These policies are currently set to expire on July 31st of this year, but the ASRS Working Group has proposed extending those until July 31st, 2021. That extension does still need SLC approval, but I don't anticipate that being a problem. One last thing I just want to remind you all about these policies is they're not meant to override your local policies, and particularly in terms of, you know, campus safety. So, for instance, if your campus is not allowing unaffiliated users into your library, and you don't have a book drop outside, you don't have to let a user in to return an item. Your local campus policy would still take precedent. Another thing I want to point out, this walk-in borrower being able to submit a resource sharing request policy is, we're hoping, a temporary policy, a stopgap. We realize that it's not the most ideal way to allow users to pick up or drop off items at any SUNY location. That would in all likelihood be a fulfillment network. So the ASRS Working Group is going to start looking into that very, very soon. And fortunately, Ex Libris has agreed to help us with testing and configuration. And lastly, we realize that this is a huge change that's going to require a lot of testing and a lot of feedback from campuses. So this isn't something that's going to be unilaterally implemented. There will be plenty of opportunities for folks to provide feedback on this potential change. So please keep an eye out for more information on all of that. Thanks, Shannon. One last thing about accepting returns from other SUNY's users. If you receive an item back from a user from another campus, we do have a web form that you can use to provide SLSS with the item barcode. What we will then do is log into the owning library's Primo, move that item into a temporary location to indicate that it was returned at another campus. And in doing that, that will check in the item from the user, so it will no longer be listed as checked out to them. And also, it will complete any resource sharing requests, ALMA resource sharing requests attached to the item. If there are any ILLiad resource sharing requests, I will email the borrowing library to let them know. There's a list that I've been keeping of libraries who are currently capable of accepting returns from other users. The link is here. And that FAQ, I'm really just collating information, responses I'm receiving to a survey I put out on your ability to accept returns from other campuses. So again, I know I've said this a bunch of times, I apologize for being a bit of a broken record here, but as things change at your library, please update your response to that survey. If you need to update it on a weekly or even daily basis, that's okay. It's very helpful to have up-to-date information. So please, whenever things change at your library in terms of your ability to accept returns, please let us know. And just a couple of other resource sharing related changes coming in ALMA. I just want to point out in the June release, the request searching feature has been folded into the regular ALMA search function. There's no longer, when you go to the borrowing or lending resource sharing request, a discrete function for searching requests. It's part of that searching feature that always appears at the top of the page. Also, I want to let you know that request notes now appear on the Pick from Shelf list and on pull slips. Unfortunately, those request notes, it contains some additional request information that I think is kind of unhelpful. So I have submitted a case about that. Hopefully we can get that non-note information out of the note field soon. But it is helpful at the very least to finally have those notes viewable on the Pick from Shelf list and on the pull slip. And lastly, and I know Shannon already alluded to this, but the July 2020 release will include a fix for that issue where if a lender shipped an item and then accidentally scanned it back in, they were completing the request on both the borrowing and the lending end. And then I was having to run a daily analytics report to manually recreate those requests. That should be a thing of the past come July. When a lender ships an item and then goes to scan it in, they should now receive a warning saying, "Are you sure you want to do this?" Which you don't. So hopefully that will help fix the issue. I will definitely be testing it as soon as the July release is available. And that's everything I've got. I'll hand it over to Maggie.
And sorry, Maggie, that we didn't leave you much time. I'd say take the time that you need and then...
I'm going to speed through this.
Yeah, sorry about that, Maggie.
No. Thank you. I'll try to go as fast as I can. I do talk fast in general. So really excited about the SUNY Local Subject Heading Initiative. I started to implement this. Phase one is complete. All display normalization rules for all 60 campuses in the network zone have been configured so that anytime library cognitive subject headings of illegal aliens and aliens are in the metadata of the physical bibliographic record and electronic physical records that reside in ALMA, that means IZ, NZ, CZ records, but it excludes CDI records. It will now display records and will display the local subject headings we have associated with the terminology, the Library Congress subject headings. And I'm going to put into chat the libguide that's been created for this project that explains in depth all the phases. So Shannon, you can go next to the next slide. So just be aware that in phase one, you still need to search by the Library Congress subject headings because it's still in the metadata of the bibliographic records for the physical ones in the network zone and the IZ. Phase two is I'm starting to implement now. This is going to be a longer phase. It may take from start to finish 3 to 4 weeks, depending on how quickly I can move through each campus. And what this will do is I'm going to configure everything with the normalization rules and in everybody's IZ. I'm going to change the metadata of IZ-only physical bibliographic records that contain these Library of Congress subject headings. I will change normalization rules for anything being imported into the IZ for physical records so that content is changed. And so only at this phase two will your IZ-only physical bibliographic metadata be changed. And those records can be searched by the local subject headings. Just be aware, CZ records will not be impacted by phase 2 or 3 because I can't change the metadata of those records. CDI, it will not be impacted by phase 1, phase 2, phase 3. And why not both? Oh, I can do it for the I can do it for electronic records coming in if you're keeping the metadata, but is that what you mean? Oh, that's weird. I just got a weird. Okay. So there's a question, why not both? Please clarify. So so I can't impact those records or the CDI. So at this phase, it will just be impacting your IZ only records. And then when we go to phase 3, which you can move forward, Shannon. So with phase 3, all the network zone physical bibliographic records will be impacted. All the metadata that have the Library of Congress subject headings of illegal aliens and aliens will be changed for the SUNY local subject headings. And the normalization rules will also be searched as well. So the normalization rules for anything coming in from OCLC will be applied. So there's no extra cataloging work for anybody for your IZ or NZ records. And just be aware, I can't impact anything with the CZ or the CDI records. But once the network zone and phase 3 has been implemented, which will go rather quickly because I already have the sets done and it's a lot less configuration for one instance as opposed to 60, then you can search all the physical records by the local subject headings. So somebody asked a question, Maggie asked a question, SUNY heading, and why not both SUNY heading and Library of Congress subject heading? If the metadata for the physical records have been changed, that Library of Congress subject heading no longer is going to exist in the bibliographic record. So you wouldn't be able to search by that term. If the metadata of the bibliographic records in the CZ and the CDI can't be impacted, then they need to be searched by the Library of Congress subject headings. So are there any questions? So I want to just say I did a session on this yesterday about phase 1. I gave a glimpse of what's going to happen in phase 2. It's in the LibGuide. It's not in the LibGuide, but it is in the LibGuide, but not that LibGuide. It's in under the SLSS webinars that we've done, and you can find that. I posted it to Basecamp as well. I recommend that you watch that because it's a lot of detail, a lot of content, and will help you understand better, as well as looking at the LibGuide for the Change the Subject project. You can move forward, Shannon. Okay. So here's the resources, the LibGuide. There's a link, of course, I didn't put that. And I just want to say that there's a configuration questionnaire that I've sent out to all cataloging leads. And it's just about the full record display. And it's when I'm going in to make these configuration changes for your Primo discovery, I have a list of a few other things that the SLSS is willing to make changes for your campus. And they will confer with the necessary people at your campus to decide if there's any other additional configurations for your full record display you'd like. Okay, you can move forward. Thanks. Another thing that I've done, and this ties a kind of into the local subject heading initiative, because this will be one of the configurations that the SLS will be able to do for you when I'm doing phase 2 of the SUNY local subject heading initiative. So a lot of campuses would like to also display their copyright date in addition to the creation date, because sometimes there are different dates, and sometimes it's important for researchers and for citations. So the way that it is configured, the display norm rules for creation date, it does not allow you to say, display this mark field and this mark field and this mark field. What it does is it uses this ROTA approach instead. So if the creation date's in the 008, it's gonna stop there. If it's not there, it's gonna go down to the 260. If it's not there, go to the 264. second indicator one, et cetera. So there's no way to say to display both. So what had to happen was a local field had to be created, which is going to be Mark 976. It's going to be dedicated to the copyright date. And this has all been done behind the scenes for Network Zone Records, so that when you make, if these changes get made to your campus, it's not just going to impact your IZ records, it'll impact your NZ records. And now you can add to your full record display the copyright date. And so what it does is it takes the copyright date that's in 264, second indicator four, subfield C, copies it to the Mark 976. And because it's copied there, I'm able to create a local display norm rule to be able to display this, and it gets added to all your views. So this is an optional configuration that is part of that greater questionnaire. Once I get the final piece of the IZ norm rule, because it's not working as one unit, I will post a FAQ on how to do that if you would like to do it on your own instead. You can go next, Shannon. Thanks. So I'm just going to briefly go over some of the release notes. There's a lot in the July release notes, so please look it over. For acquisitions, the Gobi API real-time orders is now going to match electronic resource to CZ. This is wonderful news because before this release, it's not possible. So everything had to go to your IZ. You had to link it to the NZ, link it to the CZ. So if you're one of the campuses that have Gobi API real-time ordering, you can now create a new order API for Gobi that links to that uses the network zone and delete the one that you were previously using to the IZ. And what this will do is it's going to look for the matching portfolio. If it's not there, it's just going to link, add it to your IZ, and it's going to be a standalone portfolio. And also with this release, you're going to have the ability to change the owner for an invoice after you've edited it. So for some reason you need to change the owning of an invoice, this will be available. What's kind of cool is if you do a lot of sets, you know, you can only really, you know, each set creates one at a time, so they wait in a queue to go. So now you can do multiple itemized sets can be created at the same time. So it will speed up the creation of sets if you do a lot of work with them. Can you move forward, please? Okay. So for the network zone, this is kind of cool. There is a release note for the network zone. Local sets can now be saved in the NZ. So this is really kind of cool because sometimes you ask me for some information and you have to create a set in your IZ. You send me, you know, Excel spreadsheet of it, then I have to upload it into the network zone. This bypasses that. So now you can save a local set to the NZ. And there's a save in network action that's been added to the manage sets page. And just note that normalization rules cannot be run on the network zone bibliographic records from within your institution zone. It's just so that you're aware of this, because non-localized fields in the network zone bibs, they can't be changed from within an institution zone. So if you're making any kind of changes, it still has to be in your IZ to your IZ set. Now in resource management, there's more than this, but these were the highlights. Mark 21 has been updated for bibliographic authority holding classification and community information. This is coming from the Library of Congress. So the Library of Congress, bibliographic authority holdings classification, all this information has been, that is in the Library of Congress, is now been updated in AMA. So we are in sync with the changes that have been made at this point in time with the Library of Congress. Previous release note, only a few of the display links when you go in to look at items were under this manage selected. Now all of them, all the display links are now underneath this drop-down menu except for add items, that's still a separate link. Just want to say we're testing out the new MD editor. There's a group of 10 volunteers from 5 SUNY libraries. So we have Binghamton University's SUNY Fredonia, Oneonta, New Paltz, and University of Buffalo. So we have 10 participants who are on this team, and we've started testing out the new MD editor almost 2 weeks ago. So we're going to test all the current functionality, we're going to test the new functionality, and we're going to open and track cases as we discover maybe things aren't working as expected on our end. So I just want to say that we're going to be doing a resource management training. It will be scheduled for the fall of 2020 for the new MD editor. It's going to be a fall-long training as new functionality gets implemented to the new MD editor, and we will do training to go over each aspect of the new MD editor and the workflows. Thank you.
And that's a perfect segue to the training update. So I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you to everyone. This is going to be my last update as a training consultant. The project has ended. And I wanted to thank everyone. It's been an absolute pleasure to work with both shared services directly and less directly with everyone at SUNY. So thank you much. Okay, now go ahead, Shannon. So one of the biggest remaining items from the task list that we had for shared services training was the tune-up checklist that came out of the site visits earlier this spring. And so that is now live. This is a Google Doc. It is in view-only mode. So when you go to the Google Doc, if you click on that link, you'll go there. And when you go there, you will be able to download it locally, but you can't edit it as a Google Doc. That's just so it doesn't get changed by one campus for everybody. But again, this is an annual tune-up checklist. It has some things in common with the original health checklist, but is its own thing. And the suggestion is that you go through this once a year at least. And it just kind of gives you some benchmarks as to where you are relative to what's possible with ALMA and Primo VE. So nothing is required per se, but you can look back at some earlier decisions, such as with acquisitions or other cataloging things, and see, you know, do you want to do more? Do you want to do something differently? Do you want to change things up? And it does have links to support materials to help you in your decision-making process and your reviews. Another last improvement is in the index guide for all of the ALMA Primo training. On the very front page, if you scroll down a little bit, you will now see a list of suggested training sequences. So this answers the question, I have a new e-resources librarian starting, what order should they do the training in? I have a new cataloger, I have a new technical services person, what order should they do the training in? And so I didn't include the links because all the links are in the left-hand navigation, and this way you can just look at all of them and open them all up at the same time. But this is a screenshot. Obviously, there's more down below cataloging and technical services, but it does give suggested sequences of how to approach the training guides. While I'm also here, you'll note that now on every single page in any of the training guides, there is an ALMA guide page feedback form. It's exactly what you see. It's super short, and it's just to give all staff the opportunity to give feedback on the training guides and see if there's anything else that can be added to them to make improvements. Okay. Wrap up. What has happened over the past year since Go Live? The training and documentations materials have all been developed. All of the guides are available from the index guide at that /LSP training URL. Many FAQs have been created by SLSS, and you are all awesome in how much you are documenting there. There is also a growing repository of examples of local and campus documentation and training. If you have some that you'd like to contribute, go to that Basecamp link, and that gets you there, but you can also go log into Basecamp and then go to the SUNY HQ, and then it's in the Docs and Files folder, and you'll be able to find it pretty quickly. Just also as a reminder, there is a Basecamp Brief User's Manual that I created for help for staff who are less sure about using Basecamp, less confident about that. As far as webinars and presentations, since go live, there have been more than 100 training webinars plus the Cafe Alma online learning circles, which were awesome opportunities for people to talk from different campuses. There was one in-person training. There were obviously supposed to be more, but they remained or were moved online due to COVID-19. And that turned into the e-resources, fulfillment configuration, and acquisitions online courses. And as Shannon alluded to, that's something, and those have been very successful so far. We've had a lot of good feedback. Go ahead. If you want more hard and fast numbers, I only have data from mid-October through June for all of the webinars and presentations, because that was when we started using LibCal as a registration form. So just since, I forgot the totals, it's something 97 total events between the 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9 months, and over 3,300 participants in all of these programs. So my thanks to all of the members of Shared Services SLSS, because you guys did an amazing amount of online training in a remarkably short amount of time and got to reach a whole lot of people. So congrats and well done. Okay, now go ahead. And that's all you, Shannon.
Yeah, and I'm just going to end it here because I think we're a fair amount past time. I want to say thanks for everybody who's stuck on. I know there's a lot who had to go off, and we'll follow up on the training transitions at the next LSP or next Shared Library Services update. If there's a quick question, we'll take it. Otherwise, we'll end now since we're a bit past time. And I'm responsible for that. I talked a lot in the beginning. So thank you, Jennifer, for all your efforts, and appreciate you getting us to the point we're at now. All right. Thanks then, everyone. I'm going to stop the recording.